Welcome to Conversations Around Conversations about the conversations we just had on the Clubhouse app earlier today.
This is Tech Theater, Clubhouse Conversations. It's a podcast to continue that conversation. We have these incredible conversations with really, really brilliant people that sit at the intersection of technology and the theater.
Our Clubhouse conversations are only an hour long, so we always walk away from the talks with so many thoughts and more things we wanted to talk about. So we decided to share those thoughts, keep on talking, and reach even more of our friends and collaborators. So hey, y'all, I'm Jess, CEO and co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. I am a theater creator. I love creating it, watching it, and of course, talking about it.
And I'm Joe, co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. I try to bring a tech perspective to this tech theater conversation because my background is actually in the startup technology land.
And so with that, welcome to Tech Theater Tuesdays. Today on Clubhouse, we talked about the trend of traditional venture capitalists investing in the creator economy, which usually means investing in tech startups and new platforms, more so than investing in the actual creators, right? Venture capitalists are in the game of scalable products. Creators, by just design, are inherently non-scalable, right? Because that's what makes it special.
Human beings, they're so hard to scale.
The folly of human existence. Yeah. So let's run. Okay, so we have a lot to talk about today, and it's not all great. It's a little concerning, alarming, as our friend Gabby kept saying on the stage today in Clubhouse. But let's run down maybe like the things you need to know from this article in order to follow the ensuing nihilist, existential, oh God, what are we even doing here conversation we're about to have.
I just got terrified that you're going to be like, so Joe, run us down that list.
Oh, that's exactly what I was about to say.
That's why I was preempting. I was like, I have no idea which bullet points are in Jess's head right now.
Okay. So increased VC attention on investing in creators, quotes, in quotes. Increase in funds, therefore, that are specifically devoted to that kind of a tech business that supports creators. Positing the question that was sort of brought up, one of the questions inside the article that was brought up that we spent a lot of time ending up talking about was, are they actually investing in the creator when ultimately like the tech product is the thing that provides the outsized returns?
Well, I have one to throw in that we'll probably get to. There is historically a race to the bottom when it comes to pay for creators. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is this accelerating that trend? Is this helping creators, hurting creators? How is it impacting creators? Because they are the lifeblood of these sorts of social media platforms and technology platforms.
Yep. And then I'll add one more that I think probably isn't going to end up being relevant to our conversation, but that wasn't brought up until we were talking about all this on Clubhouse. And our friend Gabby, who is an amazing, incredible producer, or she finances films. She's awesome. She sort of very quickly pointed out after a skim of the article how many bad actors were at the helm of these funds that are investing in this space. Like, problematic folks, people who have very, very spotty pasts across a lot of like things we care very deeply about. So I just think that's an aside that we probably will get back around to that she pointed out that I thought was relevant.
Yeah. Put a pin in it because I have a bullet or two on that.
Oh, interesting. I can't wait.
I loved having Gabby there just to like take us briefly aside again and talk about the fact that these sorts of conversations and the whole reason that we have this podcast and to continue these conversations is because the amazing people that join us on Clubhouse and the amazing conversations that come out of it. And Gabby just being like such an amazing example of someone with a lot of insight and expertise in an area and a space that is adjacent to the ones that we play in and the ones that we think about, and just like providing a whole different lens and a whole different perspective on things that we think we know about, but we like don't know a whole side of them. Mm-hmm. Just like the beauty of that with bringing people together around these conversations.
Yeah. And maybe that's a good place to start for you and I and everyone who's with us listening to the podcast right now is Gabby. We met Gabby a long time ago, in COVID years. and she was sort of the first person to point out to us like, hey, if you're creating a tech product, right, and you're creating any kind of space on the internet that houses and supports story making, there's money out there for that. And she was really the first person. I think you maybe knew about this. I certainly didn't at the time. That like there were funds, to your point, Lucy, being made for TikTok creators, right? Like VC funds or investor funds. I don't know if they were VC. And I was saying today that like at the time I was like, wow, incredible. This cool. I don't really understand this and I don't get where the incentivization is. And but like I nodded my head and I was like, I believe if Gabby's telling me this exists, but I don't really get it. So Lucy, when you brought this article in today, right, which contextualizes why VCs are pouring money in and then adds this essential like sort of inquiry into like, hey, it might not actually be into creators, right? It's creators are the laundering of the money, right, to get it into the tech product that's really scalable. I was like, okay, so now I understand that incentivization. I get why there are funds for creators because they're probably not actually for the creators, but this sort of inspired a terrible avalanche of like, oh God, what are we even doing?
should we get into it? And I do want to just like, I want to give Gabby the shout out that she deserves, you know, including her last name, which I had to go look up. So Myers. Sorry, Gabby Myers.
We'll link her in the show notes.
She is a creative executive at Killer Films, Inc. So if you've got money that you want to invest in some cool films, you should reach out
Hell
to her
yes.
and go look her up. She's
but for
awesome.
Real.
All right. We're getting into it.
Yep.
Where do you want to go?
If you can't see me, and you can't because you're listening to a podcast, I've put my fist under my chin, and then I'm going to say, what do you think about my existential crisis I'm having now, Joe?
Which one is that? I feel like there's like three nested inside of here.
That's
like,
so bad.
At the core of which is like creators as fodder. Like the way you just used like the term to launder. Like it's like laundering money through these, mm-hmm. you know, human beings that are the creators. And then they're just slowly being wrung dry by these various technology companies and or the platforms that they're working on, and that race to zero or race to the bottom, I guess, when it comes to the money that they as creators can get either from these platforms or from advertisers or from, you know, these funds where they're just a cog in a wheel. And, you know, for a few, it will work out really, really well. It's the same economics as like YouTube mm-hmm. or these, you know, the gilded few who become the super, super famous, you know, the PewDiePies of the world.
Yeah.
They do great. But for the hundreds of thousands of creators that sort of sit even just right below that tier, you know, a couple of 100,000 followers on YouTube, they're like cranking out content to like just barely live. Like to make $40,000 a year from, you know, YouTube advertisements and a sponsorship here or there by some small to medium brand. And like, that's a grind for all of those people. And they're just being churned through the system and helping YouTube make a whole bunch of money on advertisements by creating the content that attracts people to the platform. And is that just like the economics of these platforms that require people to drive the content creation and therefore the consumption? And then the advertising model that allows for these technology platforms to provide a free service that still makes them money.
And maybe I'm listening to everything you said, and I'm trying to figure out why I am so bereft right now when like everything you said, I'm very, very aware of, you know what I mean? And like, it's like a huge problem. And maybe it's the switch from like the creator side brain, which has always been my perspective on things, which is exactly what you said. Like it's impossible if you're not the 1% to make money on YouTube or any other tech platform, to the founder side brain, where you're like,
how do we screw these creators? Is that where you're at?
Well, no,
just kidding.
I'll kill you. but like, I was saying to you earlier today, I have never thought about it. And it's the, you know what I think is scary?
Is that a rhetorical? What do you think is scary?
Yeah. Thank you for filling that time. Cause I wanted to try to figure out how to say this. The blatant, like the blinders, like the, it's like murdering someone in plain day and no one paying attention. The idea that like, I was saying today in Clubhouse.
That was dark.
Yeah. Well, I go to town hall for Clubhouse every Sunday to learn about product development and just like trace. It's really, I feel like it's a real privilege to get to watch their trajectory. And they're always like, this is for the creator. This is for the creator. And I do believe that's why they made this. But the VCs aren't putting their money in for the creator, but they're letting everyone talk like they are. And they're like, you build your business like they are, but they're 100% going to sacrifice this creator. And on top of it, to Gabby's point today, they're making themselves the creator, which is fucking terrifying because this is a bunch of mostly rich white men who now, like we're talking about this guy that's cited in the Times article, who's like Andreessen Horowitz.
Nate Jones
got picked up by William Morris. And it's like, you know what I mean? It's like cold murder in daylight. Like, this is really fucked up. And I'm really, 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 really upset and like scared and worried and a million things I can't unpack right now.
Yeah, I hadn't put it together, like the comparison to the sort of bait and switch that the early sort of tech 2.0, social media 2.0 companies like Facebook sort of laid out with, you know, it was kind of the technology for good. Like, we are going to change the world for the better by bringing it together online. And like, there's very many good things that came out of mm-hmm. the existence of Facebook, and there are equally as many bad things. Like, I don't know where you put that lens, but there are very many bad things. Mm-hmm. And we just like have for the longest time just like ignored those. And we're like, no, we're going to continue behind this messaging of like social media for good, connectivity for good. And this like feels like another version of that, where it's like the story feels so good up front. We're building tools for creators to be able to like express themselves, create their content, grow their audiences, create communities, make money, live a nice life, I guess. But it's all just a ruse to, you know, get everyone on board and to be like, oh yeah, I love Clubhouse. That's fun and cool. Oh yeah, like I love TikTok. That's fun and cool. But behind the scenes, and what we're going to be slow to realize and then only really understand having looked back after the damage is already done, that it was churning creators through it and sort of taking advantage of their time, their energy, their output in order to enrich themselves through advertising dollars, VC money, sponsorships, whatever the mechanism will be.
Can we call this episode "This Is So Fucked"? Please. Like, this is so fucked, because then I'm listening to what you just said. This is where my brain goes. This is even worse laundering of like narrative, because Clubhouse, for instance, you are the one who explained to me like one of the backers of Clubhouse is like the father of this growth model of VC, right? I'm going to terribly explain this. The guy who is like writes about like growth at any,
like, oh, Andrew Chen.
Yes, I invest only in like companies that are basically going to grow really fucking. Tell everybody what the fuck that I'm trying to talk about. That I'm not qualified to talk about.
I love when you start down a path like that and you're like, this thing you told me, and I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about right now. Like, I'm gonna try my best to catch up by the end of Jess's sentence. But I can't remember, I'm trying to search for Andrew's background, but he is like, yeah, he's one of the early sort of growth hackers. He, you know, innovated and expanded on the model of like just growing, you know, a startup company using the benefits of the marginal economics of startup software businesses, which is that it basically costs you no additional dollars to service additional customers. So it's just like blow it the fuck out, get as many customers as you possibly can, grow as fast as you can, and figure out everything else later. And so optimizing metrics and whatnot towards acquisition and growth. And he's really, really, really good at it. And now I believe he is also actually at Andreessen Horowitz, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
And is part of the team that is supporting Clubhouse.
So how fucked is that? Because it's not even like everyone knows what is happening with Clubhouse. They went through like three series within what, 8 months or something like that. And they're valued at $2 billion. And guess what doesn't scale? Investing in 50 creators to make pilots.
I mean, the number 50 seems so insanely small compared to 2 to 4 billion in valuation.
I will say they're being paid $5,000 a month reportedly. And that's...
Oh, get me on that train.
I know. But do you know what I mean? Like, back to the laundering thing, it's not like, this is not for creators. This is literally, we just have to have as many. They passed 6 million users 3 or 4 months ago. The economics don't work. There are not 6 million creators on Clubhouse. We have seen it even in our own. We have incredible conversations. And since January, when we started this, right, we had a conversation internally, and I was like, y'all, my experience with content is just, if it be quick to dump it if it's not working. But if it is, even if you're not getting the numbers of people you want, like, you, part of this is just staying at it and staying consistent because of the way the technology works. But really, like, for us, it's going to take someone famous, right? Saying like, oh, check out this room, or us, you know, getting a bunch of press and it's included in it or whatever it is. Like, we're just like not going to, and not that we need to grow our Clubhouse room because it exists for a bunch of other things, but it's a good example of what we're talking about. So like, the idea that Clubhouse is for creators is insane. It's just like an insane idea, because literally the person who birthed growth hacking is the investor in his firm in this thing. And that's inherently at odds with making creative content.
Yeah. I want to take us the direction that came up across the Clubhouse conversation that kind of like piggybacks on this, and I think will help us to go even deeper into it, which is this idea that every person, company, entity inside of this ecosystem like wants to be the other person. So like VCs right now like have this weird want to be like content creators, mm-hmm. and like influencers and mm-hmm. famous people, for lack of a better word. And that's how we're kind of seeing it reflected through here, and like with A16Z like launching a whole media vertical, and like it's mm-hmm. it is kind of awesome, right? And like these people are thoughtful and insightful and well researched, and creating content now that it's happening is like, oh, that feels actually kind of like logical. And then like the other direction, you have like media companies that are spinning off like direct to consumer brands and want to become their own investors. And like everyone is just like trying to play on the other side of the, like the fence. You're like, I want to go do what that person's doing. And we're all just like kind of, yeah, swapping jobs, swapping roles. But like to what end? And like specifically to like what, like a content creator like you or me or anyone else that we work with like does not have the power to go be a VC in the same way that
right
someone who is like controls a lot of power via the money that they control inside of an investment firm like an Andreessen Horowitz can build a huge following. You know, I'm assuming that they're smart and thoughtful and well-spoken or well-written, but like they don't necessarily even need to be because they just control these levers and these people have to go to them for investment.
Oh my God. I hate this so much. This is so problematic.
It feels like it's becoming increasingly similar to like the philanthropy model, where it's like rich person has money. Everyone else just caters to said rich person because they need and or want that money. And then, you know, rich person is incentivized to donate that money because of the tax code. So it's like, have we just been in that the whole time? Probably.
Oh God. Well, which begs a bigger question that's only half formed in my head, but like is, and this is, I think comes back to the question we've been asking ourselves all day since we had this conversation, right? Like with the Give Back concert and what we've done here, I love grassroots because grassroots decentralizes that power. It like collects at scale more at smaller amounts. So you still have the same, not the same art, maybe in politics, let's talk about, you have arguably the same impact through grassroots or a, you know, sort of equal impact, but like you lose all of that, like I'm centralizing the power behind this one or two people and we have to cater to them stuff, which is why I love grassroots. It's amazing. Can you do that with tech, like, and content creators?
Maybe. I mean, like blockchain technology is,
I guess that's it. Yeah.
Very consciously designed to disaggregate and decentralize.
Here we are at NFTs again. Like, oh no. Joe just rolled his eyes.
Like, yeah, I mean, my issue with NFTs is again just like the, like it just is going to accrue upward towards like rich person sure want to own this status symbol NFT for the sake of owning it. Yeah. And it's just trading a bunch to like a gilded few. Second time I've used the word gilded this conversation.
Well, okay, so here's another question that sort of came up across the conversation in Clubhouse, and then we had actually like someone we collaborate with drop by the office today and we got talking about it with him too. So we were talking about, again, this space in the in-person space in the UK that is happening, that is just going to be free ass live work for artists. And it's not merit based. And the government donated the land and a building they were going to tear down. It's going to be run by, I forget what Justin said, a foundation or some kind of nonprofit. And we were sort of talking about this essential question of, if building technology for creators is just inherently going to like put a bunch of limitations on the create, like Gabby's point was, I think Gabby said it the best out of everybody or the most concisely, like you have to build the tech first. So the tech is putting parameters around creating the art, as opposed to like in her world, for instance, where you're like financing someone else's brainchild that had no boundaries, except I guess you have to put it on film, I suppose. But so if you have all these, like, tech is imposing a gatekeeping system in some ways for creators just inherently because the tech got built first and informs the creation in person, like this space in the UK, like doesn't really come with that, right? Because in person, I can create something in this space in the UK that I got for free for tech, and I can create a stage show and I can create a podcast. And like, there's just something inherent about in-person space that does not have those limitations in the same way. So our colleague Kyle posed this question. I think you were grabbing coffee when he did, but like, is that what you have to do as a tech company that's creator centric? Ultimately, do you have to strike a balance? And like, can you not, you just like can't do the tech version of it by itself, that it has to be in balance with some kind of in-person component, was his question, which I thought was really interesting and I'd love to hear your thoughts on.
Oh, well, one, I don't think I fully understand, which is part of the fun of it. But then secondly, it feels connected to, and I'll try my best to bring it back around. Like, I've been thinking about sort of like local economy, smaller versions of an economy that, you know, it's becomes like more tightly knit and like self-reinforcing, where it's like the person who, you know, works in the mine spends that dollar at the grocery store, which goes and gets spent at the movie theater, whatever. Like, it connects much more smallly all around. And, and when I think about like the decentralized technologies like a blockchain or something like that, like most of their use cases have been to like just connect the entire global market together around a thing like a Bitcoin or whatever it might be. And I was like trying to think about like ways to localize the sort of decentralization. So it's like you and I are trading things back and forth, and our small community is trading things back and forth, and there's like an exchange of value. And I don't know where that value starts, so let's leave that out for 1 second. Just assume we all have the same amount of money walking into it.
Great.
And like, we're just sort of exchanging value around these smaller communities. I don't know. I'm totally lost with it.
Like,
I'm trying desperately to
bartering my baked beans for like a like rabbit pelt.
Yeah, bartering your content for a rabbit pelt, and then incorporating that rabbit pelt into your next content. But that like the consumers of what a creator is creating are like, they remain fairly local. And like the version of this that I started thinking about was like, oh, the like regional and local theaters, how their communities are what continue to allow them to exist. And I'm guessing many of them are backed by like a single wealthy person, but the community generally like contributes to his existence.
Oh, that's interesting. And like with sponsors, like we were talking about with this awesome nonprofit that we're designing a show with in the fall, like a big, this was not theirs, but like a big bank, like city, right? Hard to get that money in New York, sponsorship dollars, but much more accessible in a community like in Indiana, because they have to be a part of that local community actively, and it matters for them to have that local impression as opposed to putting their money nationally, right?
Yeah. And so to like try and take us back to where you and Kyle were talking, well, I guess I was getting coffee or whatever.
I just made that up. Yeah, but you totally, were not there though, right?
Totally made up. I don't drink afternoon coffee. It makes me crazy. but no, I was not there for that part of that conversation. But yeah, that idea of like centralizing it around something physical, whether it be these like small local or regional theaters, smaller local or regional theaters, as like a physical component that can somehow be extended digitally, but like it connects locally and it's empowered locally. I don't know. I was hoping you would have picked it up by now. And I'm just like,
I'm just thinking about stuff. No, I'm thinking about like, I think I've mentioned this like a couple of times here, right? But like John Zirkle at Warren Miller PAC in Montana, who was like among the earliest of folks to say to us, like, if we have to compete against Netflix, the only thing we have is our local identity. And that has to be reflected in our digital space, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like trying to pick up what the choices are after that. But I see that connection.
Yeah. It's like, how is technology empowering and fueling the connection of those small communities around those values that they share?
Can I ask a fucking nerdy blockchain question?
If I have an answer, I'll happily try to provide it.
What do you think could be the things that blockchain circumvents? Like, if you were building, like, I don't know, let's just say Clubhouse served local communities. It doesn't, you know, whatever. But if you built it on blockchain, like, were all these really concerning issues we're talking about, like, right now, are there any that are very obvious that blockchain would kind of circumvent?
I have no idea. Because at the end of the day, blockchain is just a distributed ledger. It's just a list of truths.
Right.
A list of transactions that were, you know, because they're immutable and shared around the world by many millions of different nodes, that they cannot be changed. So it becomes, a list of immutable truths. And that's why I like so many of the concepts that we talk about and like technological things. It's really just like a list of who owns what at the end of the day is like the most like finite and simplistic use case, a la the Bitcoins of the world. But Ethereum has these sort of smart contracts, and when certain criteria are met, they can transact. They can actually like take an action, do a thing, and like that is where it gets like slightly more interesting, slightly more increased set of possibilities. But I don't know what the specific thing would be for something like a Clubhouse. Like the two just feel so far apart from me, and I can't figure out how you map them together without like actually sitting down and thinking about it.
That's true. I know there's something flittering at the edges of my brain about like how blockchain was described to me in the beginning, like way, way back before anyone was talking about it. And this theater person right here pointing at myself was trying to figure out what the fuck blockchain was, but that it, like at the end of the day, a big bank, right? Like going back to your ledger, but like in the real tangible sense of a ledger, like a bank controlling the ledger means at the end of the day, my bank account is actually like controlled by a human, right? Like it's, you know, simplifying it, but, and that blockchain was more, like you said, more dependable because it's sort of this, a bunch of information coming together.
More and less at the same time.
More and less.
No central bank to go and be like, hi, I forgot my password.
Yeah, also that. That's true.
Doesn't exist.
So somewhere in that, like the VC defining the creator economy is the bank with human ledger, and blockchain is grass, like back to this idea of grassroots like models in some ways. So I feel like there's some glue somewhere that I can't get my hands around.
But I just had the thought around how like the Green Bay Packers are incorporated, and various members of their community and the fans of the team can own shares in the Green Bay Packers. Like they're owned by their fans.
What?
Yeah.
Is there a majority like non-fan?
Probably. I have no idea how it actually works. I just know that like certain you know, Wisconsinites that I'm friends with like own a piece of the Packers.
So like a co-op?
I think it's like a corporation at the end of the day. Whoa. with shares issued. I like don't know.
It's public?
I believe so, yeah. I believe anyone can go buy a share, get a pretty certificate that they put on a frame and in their wall next to their cheese hat. And you own a piece of that team that you love, and you get to express your fandom through it and point at it and put it in your dating profile. Yes, part owner of the Green Bay Packers.
Whoa.
Yeah. So like that's something, you know, again, it's just ownership, right? That's something that could be executed on a blockchain. So what are we owning through the lens of Clubhouse, right? Are we selling shares in our channel, in our group? And we're saying, hi, people, come join us, like share owners, whatever, you know, as dictated on this distributed ledger that is a blockchain, dictate the content. They tell Lucy what she should be doing. They vote on the various articles that are up in the air.
Or like if you're like me, anything that I'm invested in that is a public corporation, I get the notice that you're supposed to vote and I just throw it in the trash. Exactly. Wait, so like could this be an ecosystem? Let's use Paul Taylor because we love Paul Taylor. Paul Taylor is a dance company based in New York, right? That starts in New York City. Paul in the 60s, 50s, late 50s. They dance and they present that work in New York City. Then they start touring. So they physically start moving and gaining fans in the cities that they tour to. And that's, they build a bigger audience. They're still nonprofit, right? They're funded by corporations and foundations and all that stuff. They go online this year and they start presenting. They've been working a lot on like community programming online, and then with us building these shows and gala sort of or benefit, you know, engagements that invite tons of people in through technology. So if we're dealing with technology and building fans and friends through technology now, can we then more quickly get to like, oh, we could actually through blockchain transform Paul Taylor from a nonprofit to like a mixed model, maybe corporation where part of it is owned by the fandom, just by nature of the fact that they're more technology enabled than ever before in the history of Paul Taylor, or like, in some dream world, it's fully owned by everyone who loves Paul Taylor. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I could see it. I like get lost on like the specifics, which is not helpful for either of us or this conversation.
That's because I don't have any specifics.
But the idea that, you know, I guess at one of its more simplistic forms, it's like you buy a ticket to Paul Taylor and you now own a little piece.
Back to NFTs.
Just literally one ticket is all you need to be a an owner of some sort. And then that sort of like gets you in the door, gets you excited. You know, you own some piece of the show you saw via an NFT, right? They film and capture, and each ticket that was purchased gets one of those NFTs, limited edition, created on that date for that show. And that's like your entryway into it. And then you go see more shows, and maybe there's options to buy in further, invest in it further. And now all of a sudden you're like a tried and true fan of Paul Taylor Dance Company and all of their brilliant work.
You should see the grin on my face. This is a world I love. I love this world. I love this world because, maybe to go back to my joke about throwing away shareholder voting notifications, like that's kind of the thing with a publicly traded company, right? Is like, you're not going to get the demands from the majority of the people who own a piece of the company because they just own a little tiny piece of it, right? I'm going to throw away my voting thing. I'm not voting on your shit. Just keep making great dance.
I'm into it. I think this is a very, very cool idea. And we would love to hear out there what you think of this brilliant idea that is, you know, invented across this podcast and probably exists already, but that's okay too.
Friends, the conversation will keep going, but we are taking a quick break from Clubhouse next week. On Tuesday, September 14th, we will be filming with the Paul Taylor Dance Company at the Oculus in New York City in honor of the 20th anniversary of 9/11.
And if you're in the area, you should come stop by. The performances are at noon and 1 p.m., and they're free and open to the public.
And we'll be filming them so you can see our team in action too, which is super cool. In the meantime, new podcast episodes will continue coming out, and you can always pitch a show idea at our broadwayunlocked.com/chrobojess. And as ever, you can say hi on social media.
We'll see you back on Clubhouse, 12:55 Eastern on September 21st. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Oh, I hate that.